Contra with Anna DeBlasio right here on 720 WGN.
You can see some of the protesters, or like demonstrators.
Demonstrators.
You don't protest a legitimate election. Is that what we're going with?
That's what we're going with.
The day after that you're not happy with the result. And there, we've seen those people here on Michigan Avenue overflowing.
Yes.
Because we're very close to the Trump Tower.
Yes. Although Putin says he's pleased. So that's all that counts. All right. Congressman Adam Kinzinger is with us. He's our congressman. The official congressman of the Rokon Show with Anna DeBlantis, unpaid position.
That's right. And give him a lot of love.
He is a Republican, and he was a guy who was not on the bandwagon, let's say. And now, as President Trump's transition team is starting to take shape, and some of the first 100 days are starting to take shape, Congressman, your thought on what this looks like in the first administration of Donald J. Trump?
Well, look, we have to acknowledge last night was unbelievably historic. I mean, it basically has shown that polling had no idea what was going on. And Donald Trump did something that's, you know, frankly, politically amazing. He that probably has not been seen in a very long time. You know, I've said this, and obviously, you know, people, and I was open about my concerns, but now's an opportunity for us all to come together, not just as Republicans. I mean, I think the party is pretty amazingly united the day after today. And there's a lot of excitement. You know, let's see where I thought Donald Trump gave a good speech last night. It was humble. I thought Hillary Clinton gave a great speech today. And it's an opportunity not just to unite our party, but I think, you know, and this will be kind of my goal and focus, too, over the next few years, is to try to build some bridges across party lines. You're always going to have, you know, pretty large scale disagreements, and it's the nature of politics. We're not going to agree on everything, but I think to be able to say, all right, where are areas we can work together? Where are areas, you know, that we can find common ground? And of course, there'll be areas where it's, you know, Republicans muscling through different agenda items. But, you know, my hope now is you know, that President-elect Trump, who now feels the weight of the world on his shoulders, you know, begins to say, okay, I want to leave a legacy. How do I do that? I do that by uniting people.
Well, I thought about this a lot. Steve Bannon, who was one of the guys that was instrumental in creating the messaging for Donald Trump, at least in the last 4 months of the campaign, who is a guy from Breitbart. Those are basically part of the, you know, people are calling them the alt-right, but there's a certain wing of conservative media in America that you know, goes in for conspiracy theories, and they play with the fringes, and they play with you know, some of the hate groups and some of the other organizations, and they sit out there and they draw attention to themselves, they draw attention to their websites and their stories because they're so sort of out of the main. They're not mainstream stories, and they tend to be tinged, and they affect people. You know, there's people who read them because they want to believe them, and then there's people who read them because they can't believe other people believe them, and so that's where they get their power, right? So what concerns me about that is the people who have assumed power, whether it's Democrats or Republicans over years historically, say that we want to reach across the aisle, we want to make that happen, but he's got people around him who have intentionally created divisions. In this particular case, he's got a guy who has done stuff like that, you know, with the intention of making money and profiting by basically not necessarily telling the truth. How do we move forward here in a media environment, especially the way social media propels stories, to try to create those kinds of alliances? Because this turns into the obstructionists. The Republicans have a clear path here. The Trumpists and Republicans, who I think might be two different groups in some ways, have a clear path. He's got the executive branch, House, and the Senate. Do whatever they want for the next 2 years. How do they do that and not run into fierce resistance and fear on behalf of, you know, Republicans, maybe even like yourself, who are like, well, I don't know, that might be a bridge too far.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, my job, elected as a 16th district congressman, is to continue to be as aggressive and outspoken and bold, and I say that humbly, as I seek to be. And so whether that means it's President Obama or would have been a President Clinton or President Trump, I'm, you know, going to continue to stand for things like, you know, we have to push back against Russia, strengthen our NATO alliance, and, and a lot of those issues. So, you know, you're going to have people that are going to continue to lead as they have. The other thing is, and it's kind of an interesting dynamic. Now that, you know, there is a Republican president, or there will be a Republican president, a lot of these kind of outlets, I guess, that kind of stir controversy, in essence, to get clicks on the website and, and stir that side, they're not going to have much to go after. Because, you know, if you think about it, a lot of those, you know, the people that were angry at the Republicans that were angry at the Republican Party were saying, you know, look, how come Congress hasn't repealed Obamacare? And you say, well, you know, we only have one branch of government. It's tough to do. And it becomes, they become irate against their own party. Now you have basically a president that's going to go out with his agenda. And I think it's a lot harder for these groups to go out and stir conspiracy theories when, in fact, it is their, a Republican, at least, in the White House to do that on. So
my fear is very specific here, though. How do, when a guy has complete power, as Donald Trump will have now, because he's got a legislature behind him that theoretically is in his camp, how, and he's got some people around him who like to play this level of brutal politics, how do we keep people in, how do we keep opposition in this country safe? That becomes a very legitimate question, I think.
Yeah, I think people, you know, are concerned about that. And it's two things. Number one, it really does rest on Donald Trump and his, you know, was some of the things he said in the campaign just for campaign purposes. He obviously read the public. He won in areas we never imagined. Or is that how he's going to govern? You know, I suspect that when he woke up this morning and now all of a sudden the weight of the presidency is on your shoulder, it kind of sobers you up a little bit. And you realize that decisions you make have very serious impact, and you're now worried about your legacy. And the other thing is, again, you know, there's a lot of members of Congress that, you know, are very independent in how they think, are very concerned with some of the things you're saying in general, no matter who's president, and we'll continue to fight for that. And I'm one of those. We'll continue to fight to protect people's right to opposition.
I'm curious to know how you think this is going to affect politics kind of on a macro level. I mean, you look at Donald Trump and how he broke just about every rule of politics, and then he won the White House. The weeks leading up to this, there was so much talk about how your party, the Republican Party, had to get involved in some serious self-reflection, and now you kind of might think that the Democrats need to do the same thing. How do you see things changing, if at all?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of the magic of politics, because you never know what's going to happen at any time. And, you know, I think a lesson for Republicans in this needs to be, okay, you know, the minority vote was depressed, which seems to be part of the reason there was such a big kind of landslide victory here. But at the same time, you know, we may have lost the popular vote when all votes are counted. We have to reach into minority communities. We have to take our conservative message and explain in depth what it is, and begin to draw people into that. So in terms of, you know, in terms of what's the future of this, one thing I hope doesn't come out of it is this idea that, you know, we're not going to be statesmen when we run for president. It's about cutting people down or whatever. And instead, I hope it still goes back to debating issues and being statesmen. And again, Donald Trump has the opportunity to do that. He has the opportunity to turn a page, and I think people would be willing to accept it if he does. But there's no doubt, on both sides, there's a lot of hurt feelings right now.
Mm-hmm. Straight politics. The first 100 days, he's talking about, and we had Pat Brady in, who's run the Illinois Republican Party. I know you know Pat, who said that all the other promises he made, of the 100 and something promises that Washington Post has published today, which are many of which are probably unlikely to occur in the first 100 days. I'm being generous when I say that. Pat says, well, you know, as long as he does this big infrastructure package, if a church, you know, wants him to change the Constitution, well, you know what? You know what you get? You get a new road coming into your church. You know, sort of the way paying back by jobs and a huge government side infrastructure. Here's the real question, though. And Congressman, this becomes they're going to spend a lot of money on this deal, close to $1 trillion. How are we going to pay for that? And as a conservative Republican, as you are, doesn't that sort of it makes the government bigger, not smaller?
Well, it's a good question. And now, first off, I believe infrastructure is actually listed in the Constitution as a role of Congress. It talks about post offices and post roads.
Sure, I get it.
And so I think that's a legitimate.
Okay.
But, you know, I think there's ways to pay for it. For instance, you know, reforming the ability in allowing companies to bring their money that's parked overseas back into the United States to reinvest and taxing that at a much lower rate, but taking those profits that wouldn't have come here anyway and using it into infrastructure. There's ways to do things, but these are, look, I mean, these are going to be some extremely deep conversations, you know, promise to lift sequester, to not touch Social Security and do a major infrastructure package and cut the deficit. There's got to be ways to do that.
Right. Well, you can't do all those three things necessarily without cutting some other things. And that becomes the question and grow the military and all that. I mean, there's a lot of promise here. Again, he's got 100 of them. Mm-hmm. And there will, you know, some are going to be fought. And it'll be interesting to see how he deals with opposition from Republicans, because he really doesn't have any serious opposition in other places. He's the Democrats in the House and Democrats in the Senate don't really get much of a vote. Now, it's a tighter. It's 49-51 now that Kelly Ayotte lost in New Hampshire, so in the Senate, so that'll be a fairly interesting thing. Hey, let me ask you really quickly, because you're from Illinois, and I got about a minute left here. The in Illinois, Bruce Rauner spent a lot of money, but he got a little bit of an inroad. He broke up the supermajority in the Illinois General Assembly. The question there is: are Republicans making a turnaround in the state?
Well, I think it's the start of it. He didn't just break the supermajority. He actually, it was a pretty solid amount of seats we gained, and that was the high end of our expectations. So I think it'll send a strong message. I think it's the beginning of taking back some more power, but, you know, hopefully this drives Speaker Madigan to the table with the governor, and we can kind of get some of these bigger issues fixed. And I was very happy about, you know, except for a few races, sad to lose Dold, sad to lose Kirk. And, you know, in Munger, but, you know, we did well in these state House and state Senate levels. Oh, I just want to say one thing real quick. So I stopped by, I was doing a youth leadership summit today in Ottawa, and stopped by a college Democrats meeting, and they actually invited me. And I walked in, and I basically looked at them and said, guys, I know how you feel. I'm not here to gloat in any way, but I just want to let you know I felt exactly like you are in 2012 and 2008. Trust me, this too shall pass. You'll find a way to manage.
It's very unifying.
Yes, well,
I like that.
That's right.
That's very nice.
President Kinzinger.
Tone for all of us.
President Kinzinger in 2024, following President Michelle Obama.
Obama, 2020.
Yes,
right.
In 2020.
All
right.
All figured out.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Bye.
Violetta's got the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.